Australia pledged to hold a vote on recognising Indigenous people within 3 years. Unlike the US, Canada and New Zealand, Australia doesn't recognise Indigenous people in their constitution. The country has had decades of often heated debates on the issue and has struggled to reconcile with descendants of its first inhabitants.
Volkswagen's iconic Beetle received a send-off complete with mariachis on Wednesday as the very last one rolled off the production line in Puebla, Mexico. Over a span of 8 decades, the curvy coupe won over hearts of budget-conscious drivers around the world with campaigns like Live Below Your Means, and it became an emblem of the counterculture 60s.
The connection between slack in the economy or the level of unemployment and inflation was very strong if you go back 50 years, and it's gotten weaker and weaker and weaker. But I think we really have learned, though, that the economy can sustain much lower unemployment than we thought without troubling levels of inflation. And as we'll discuss, Libra raises many serious concerns regarding privacy, money laundering, consumer protection, and financial stability. These are concerns that should be thoroughly and publicly addressed before proceeding. And I'll just add that the process of addressing these concerns, we think, should be a patient and careful one and not a sprint to implementation.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's July the 11th, 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway here. Lots going on this morning. You heard there in the opening montage, the Federal Reserve Chairman testifying yesterday before Congress. He'll be back on Capitol Hill today. We'll spend a little bit of the program today talking about the comments that he made and the questions he answered yesterday, not only with our thought leader, because it is Thought Leader Thursday today. Don Lloyd will be here from Associated Bank. We'll talk to Don about interest rates, also some of the foreign markets, some of the global markets issues, the weakness that Powell talked about yesterday. Don will join us here momentarily. And further discussion at about 5:38 this morning. Mark Hamrick will be here, a senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, to recap some of the testimony from the Federal Reserve chief yesterday. So stay tuned to that. He's, again, back on Capitol Hill today, so we'll hear more from the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell. Let's begin, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Investors will be keeping a close eye on Wall Street today after news that the Federal Reserve could cut rates at its next meeting. The NASDAQ closed at an all-time high. The S&P yesterday hit an intraday high of 3,000 before slipping to finish just below a record close, and the Dow was up about 77 points yesterday. This morning, the futures market showing green as we look to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures up anywhere from 0.25% on the Dow to nearly 1/3 on the NASDAQ. Dow futures are up 77 points this morning. In Europe, markets are in the green as well. In London, Germany, and France, up nearly 0.25% to 1/3, 1/3 in France. And in Asia, markets in the green as well. In Tokyo, up nearly 110 points today, 0.5%. In Hong Kong, up nearly 0.75%, 227 points on the Hang Seng. And the Shanghai, up just a couple of points, up fractionally this morning. And oil is trading at $60.73 a barrel, which is up about 30 cents. In addition to talking about rates yesterday, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell talking about Facebook. You heard there in the opening montage him commenting on Libra, which is the new coin from Facebook. Powell says it raises some questions about money laundering, terrorist funding, and privacy. He also expressed concerns about consumer protection and financial stability. California Democrat Maxine Waters said Facebook may be aiming to establish a parallel banking and monetary system to rival the U.S. dollar. Waters chairs the House Financial Services Committee. Amazon says it's going to bring nearly 1,000 jobs to the metro Atlanta area. The company announcing it's going to put one of those big fulfillment centers just outside of Atlanta on 700,000 square foot of space there. And a storm brewing in the Gulf of Mexico is pumping oil prices up to nearly six-week highs. We mentioned earlier U.S. oil up nearly 35 cents a barrel. International Brent benchmark Brent crude up nearly 30 cents at $67.38 a barrel. This after WTI and Brent both closed up around 4.5% yesterday. The storm the National Weather Service is tracking could become a hurricane by the weekend. It's threatening output in the Gulf. Oil companies pulled crews off 15 drilling platforms earlier this week as a tropical depression started gaining strength. It's a Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Let's begin with Don Lloyd this morning. Don is SVP of Capital Markets and Foreign Exchange and Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks.
We have lots to talk about this morning. I want to begin with what we're seeing play out in Washington. It's the second day of testimony. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says that the economic growth globally is slowing and that the Fed is ready to cut interest rates.
It has traders on pins and needles right now. The Fed having come from a road of we're going to raise rates to 180-degree turn, and now we're going to probably lower rates, and the economy is starting to show some softness or whatnot, and you know, we're not going to be tightening anymore. Everybody's looking at who's saying what and what is it, what's the meaning behind the meaning. And today's a perfect example of that, and you know, this testimony is being watched by a lot of people this summer.
The disconnect I find is that here we have, the S&P hits 3,000, the Dow, I mean, record stock, high stock values, jobs, 220,000 jobs created. What's wrong with the economy that we need to cut interest rates?
Well, everybody's looking forward to say what's going to happen. And you're absolutely right. You know, when you take a look, there's price stability around. There's job creation going on. You know me, I've been a big U.S. bull, for quite a while. There's not another game in the world, and there's not another country in the world, I think, that can match what the U.S. is doing right now. So where are the clouds? You know, why is everybody sort of doom and gloom? Simply because we've been in this economic expansion for 10 years? There's nothing magical about 10 years, and there's nothing to say that it can't continue to go on. Personally, I think a little bit of I won't say a deep recession, but a little bit of an economic cycle, a pullback, would not be unhealthy at this stage. I think it would be real healthy for the economy to go through that, but you're sure not seeing it anywhere. So why does the Fed need to, what are they concerned about? You know, what are they seeing that we're not? I talk to a lot of different companies that are out there in the business that we're in, you know, and they're all talking about the same thing. There's not enough people to hire out there. Their contracts and their business is coming through more than it's ever been before. I don't see any weakness anywhere. So, you know, are we chasing ghosts and shadows, mm-hmm. or what are we really looking at here? I don't know.
Yeah, Powell talks a lot about the trade dispute with China. Mm-hmm. That's still unresolved. We thought maybe we would have a resolution to that when we sat down with you this morning, but that's still undone. And that's globally impacting things globally, not just with the U.S. and China.
Certainly, that's one of the specters that are out there to be concerned about. Coming out of G20, though, it looked like that whole thing was put on a hiatus and sort of a pause. There's $340 billion worth of tariffs that are going to be out there being affected by tariffs. It looks like that escalation has sort of ceased for now, you know, that everybody's sort of taken a timeout, gone to their neutral corners, not going to correct anything yet, but we're certainly not going to kick it up to the next level. So it's the great pause, if you will. I think the market's sort of like that. You know, I would probably think they'd like it more if these tariffs started to be, dismantled a mm-hmm. little bit. But at least we got a pause. So we'll see what happens there when it comes out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but there's no doubt that the tariffs over the long run will be a drag on the economy. But that's the longer run. You know, it's certainly not in the next quarter or two. To kick it out a year from now, let's see what happens.
Right.
But the
other story that's out there this morning, this is right in your wheelhouse. There's a report that President Trump has wants people in his administration to find ways to weaken the dollar. right in your wheelhouse. What's he doing?
To me, it's amazing that, you know, whether it's the administration commenting on the value of the dollar, the Federal Reserve certainly doesn't comment on the value of the dollar. To me, Trump's certainly looking for a weaker U.S. dollar, stronger foreign currency, so that it's cheaper for countries, those companies outside the United States, to purchase, hopefully, U.S. goods. If the value of the euro, the value of the yen, or the value of whatever foreign currency you're looking at is stronger against the U.S. dollar, it effectively makes our exports cheaper to them. So he's looking for that lift. He's looking for that GDP lift coming from abroad. Mm-hmm. And that's really been the piece that has been missing, I think, from this whole economic expansion over the last 10 years that we've seen. You've heard sort of the U.S. leads things, leads the way, if you will. We haven't seen that happen. The U.S., we have price stability, we have good growth, we have good economic expansion, but you haven't really seen the other economies, the foreign economies, follow suit. Europe is down in a quagmire right now. Asia is down in a quagmire. No one's really cooking out there except perhaps maybe Canada and Australia. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, China's at 6%. That's cooled a little bit. Still 6% growth is good growth. But you haven't really seen the other major economies around the globe pick up, you know, their economies and their purchasing. Getting a weaker dollar will make our goods cheaper. Hopefully that will start to ignite a little bit of this. I don't know.
And you mentioned Europe. Back to the monetary policy. Europe has the most accommodative monetary policy around, and it's been that way, but they're still having a struggle.
Lesson to be learned there. I mean, just how much more runway do we have with lower U.S. interest rates and their effect on the economy? You know, we can sustain this for quite some time, but, you know, I often wonder, you know, how much does monetary policy really influence economic expansion and growth? I'm after 40 years of doing this, I'm starting to see a disconnect there. That you know, is monetary policy really the big stick that we think it is?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I think there's more under the current than we can see right now with what's happening.
Yeah.
Don, we've all been watching what's going on in Hong Kong. Oh. These protests there. Hong Kong is one of the major market cities of the world. How is this impacting your world and global markets, what's happening?
Yeah, Hong Kong certainly has sort of, you know, captured the front page and hearts and minds of the financial markets globally. Peaceful protests that really started back in March. A little bit of history real fast. Hong Kong was a colony, a British colony back 1840 or something like that. Basically 150 years is what the British had a colony over there. In 1997, they gave up that lease. It reverted back to China with an agreement that nothing would change for the next 50 years or very little would change. And Hong Kong is really known as Hong Kong-China relationship is really known as one country, two systems. And what that 50-year period did is that nothing can really change. Hong Kong will remain a free capitalistic market. They'll have their own judicial system, their own legislation, their own. And China was really supposed to be hands-off on this. China, I think, might have had different idea and interpretation of that. So, sure, Hong Kong can have free elections, for example, but the Chinese will pick who's going to stand for election. So there's a little bit of a, you know, rubbing up against the socialism versus capitalism type, you know, one country, two system type things. And the protest started off with this whole idea of extraditing, you know, Hong Kong people in trouble with the law over to China.
Over to China.
And so what happens to this separate judicial system? And that was the law that was coming up. It was presented, you know, to be passed, and the protests began. Now, how does that impact it? And this is what's really fascinating, I think, about it. Hong Kong is one of those countries that has a pegged currency. Now, it's not a hard fixed peg. It floats between 7.75 Hong Kong per dollar and 7.85 Hong Kong per dollar. It's great for the Hong Kong economy to be pegged to something like a U.S. dollar. It's not the only country that's pegged. There are countries, other countries that are pegged to the U.S. dollar. Some are pegged to the euro. But it's very interesting to see this peg, because what a small economy like Hong Kong gets is stability in exchange rates, which is great for exporters, importers, international investors, which is what really Hong Kong thrives on. Where it's bad is you basically take U.S. monetary policy that infiltrates Hong Kong. So they have these big swings in inflation, unemployment, price changes in real estate, because they don't have the monetary tools and levers to pull, because they're tied to the U.S.'s monetary policy, which becomes a problem when the economy of Hong Kong and the economy of the U.S. get out of sync. when the U.S. monetary policy is such that it's not what Hong Kong really wants or should be doing. That's what comes, that's the negative side of coming with a peg currency. So that's what you have going on there. How has it really impacted the Hong Kong dollar? Because it's in this fixed peg, it's pretty comfortable it's going to remain within this dirty float, if you will. And we've seen the Hong Kong dollar strengthen in that dirty float simply because the cost of carrying short Hong Kong positions, you have to fund those. You have to sit there and fund these and through a mechanism. Interest rates go up in Hong Kong, the funding mechanism comes in, and people that are short Hong Kong speculating think it's going to go to the weakest point of that floor. They have to buy these things back and fund themselves so they're not overdrawn, which creates a demand for them. So it really is a sort of a foreign exchange 101 lesson that they should be teaching in colleges now on how this exchange rate mechanism works, because it really is fascinating to watch. That's the way I'm looking at it. What does it mean in the global markets? Not a lot, to be honest with you. I mean, it's more political than anything, more geopolitical to see, you know, how much is China going to get involved with Hong Kong and, you know, what's Hong Kong going to do? Because they've got this 50-year period of time.
And more so if there's more volatility, perhaps shutting down the markets there for a day or so, that would that have a big impact globally?
Shouldn't, you know, unless, of course, you're an exporter, importer, or international investor in Hong Kong. It's not going to really affect the Chinese market that much. It's going to affect Hong Kong. And you know, don't get me wrong, you know, Hong Kong, you know, it's a viable market, but it's still a relatively small market compared to the other markets of the world. So it's interesting to watch on what it's doing to the currency movements and the currency exchanges over there in a dirty peg, if you will. But it's really sending a bigger message on how China is going to, you know, extrapolate that out. You know, what's it mean for Taiwan? What's it going to mean for other countries that have a peg to, you know, there's a lot of African countries. There's a lot of Middle Eastern countries that are pegged to the dollar. Some are pegged to the euro. So this whole concept of one country, two systems, it's pretty interesting.
I want to bounce back to Europe real quickly. The situation with Italy and its public debt, they've gone back to the European Union. There's negotiations underway. Why does this feel like it's going to be another Greece?
That's going to be a market mover. That, to me, compare that to a Hong Kong. Hong Kong's interesting to watch. You know, it's sort of a lesson in currency fluctuations. Italy is going to be a market mover, and that's out there on the rise and coming in very, very fast. Second largest debt next to Greece. They are way out of their bands. They're at 130% debt to GDP. They were sort of getting sideways with the European Union, the EC. They were getting sideways with. They were getting ready to be, you know, fines imposed and whatnot, and then they promised. They promised to sit there and start to address and improve their deficits, and they sort of dodged that whole thing. I'll believe it when I see it. I don't believe it. Those deficits aren't going to get smaller. We're going to have Greece too, and it's going to be bigger, and it's going to be more severe, and it's going to be another drag on Europe. It's going to create a weaker euro. Italy's going to be a big problem.
And it's something that we should watch very closely in the United States. Our debt problem here is getting worse.
Yeah, and we have to look at, you know, what is our exposure to the European Union, specifically, you know, Italy, and, you know, who's out there that's carrying debt, you know, on the books. I mean, I'd be worried about that. Yeah, any company here in the United States that has exposure to that region, to that area over there, you know, be very careful.
Don, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. You can sit there and give me a call directly, or, you know, go to the email site. Just look up associatedbank.com. There's a nice little link on there that says Capital Markets, and every contact you have in there, you can come to me in a number of different ways.
Well, it's great talking with you again. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd, Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchanges, and Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don is our thought leader today, and we do the thought leader conversation every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Head over to associatedbank.com/thought leadership to learn more about our thought leaders and hear conversations there. And also head to the Opening Bell page on wgnradio.com for more there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says the Fed is keeping a close eye on cross currents that could affect U.S. economic growth. During a House hearing yesterday, Powell cited impacts from trade disputes as weak spots in the global economy and said that the Fed will be watching very closely and potentially moving on interest rates as early as later this month. Let's bring in Mark Hamrick this morning, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, for a recap of some of the testimony of the Federal Reserve Chair yesterday. Mark, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you.
What was your main takeaway from the chair's testimony yesterday before Congress?
Well, I think that primarily investors have been sitting down at a table, essentially looking for an all-they-can-eat menu with respect to having their hunger satisfied for a rate cut. And essentially, Chairman Powell said, hey, this is an all-you-can-eat buffet. Go right at it, meaning that he basically delivered on I think their most ambitious hopes, not entirely, but certainly, granting the wishes of investors who are looking for a high likelihood of a rate cut of 0.25% at the end of the month. To me, it was quite plain to see, and it was later affirmed by the release of the minutes from the most recent Fed meeting as well, that essentially if the crosswinds, as they've been describing it, in the U.S. economy, remained in place after their most recent meeting, which in their view they have, that indeed at the end of this month they will cut rates.
Yeah, you mentioned Fed minutes yesterday. For those of us who are watching closely, that sort of coincided with the testimony. You know, there's a lot of Fed news yesterday, but the minutes really kind of show that there is not as much division among the Fed folks about a rate cut as people had been thinking, right?
No, I think the question is, have hawks become an endangered species on the Fed? And at least from the standpoint of sort of holding the line against a rate cut, or obviously in the extreme advocating for a rate increase, it doesn't appear that they have much ability to project an argument at this point. And you know, I'm not saying that that's not justified, their stance. I'm just saying that it doesn't appear that there's a lot of dissent right now.
Yeah, and let's talk about the justification here. We asked this question a little earlier in the program on one of our other guests about what is it really that's going on? What are the cross currents? I mean, because we've seen a really strong jobs report last week. The market is doing well, near record highs on the S&P and NASDAQ. What is happening that we might need a rate cut here?
Well, I think in the chairman's view, and obviously on the part of his colleagues, I think the number one thing, and this is just my take on that, is that it's the uncertainty that is created by trade disputes and tariffs. And this does project into less fixed investment on the part of business. We are seeing a lower trajectory in this form of hiring here over the course of this year, even though we did have an upside surprise in that June reading. And obviously the global economy is slowing. So with those three things alone, and then you add in the weakness in manufacturing in the U.S., I think that's their justification.
So what will be the stimulative effect of a rate cut if we, in fact, do see one at the end of July?
Well, I think that's almost the biggest question. And let me add one thing to what I just answered, and that is the fact that inflation hasn't hit the Fed's target almost forever. And they are concerned that inflation is underperforming and that the outlook for that is seemingly far off, continuing into the future. In terms of the effect, I think that it's quite minimal, and I think that that's one of the unfortunate things about the position we now find ourselves in. The other part about that is it worries me quite a bit that if you think about, let's say this is an old Western movie or TV show where, the quote-unquote good guys are in a corner with only so many bullets in their holster, and that's what the Fed has, is a limited number of bullets, the ammunition that they wield in defending against downturns or recessions as interest rate cuts. You know, we're only at between 2.25% on the Fed funds rate, and so that means that you essentially can only go down 8 or 9 times with respect to 25 point cuts. So if you spend, let's say, two or three of those this year, as some people think, obviously if you get into a more protracted or a dramatic downturn, you know, then you're going to see 0 to 1/4% sooner rather than later. But obviously, in terms of the impacts, it obviously makes the cost of funds less so. But it also has the impact of reducing the meager returns that people have gotten from savings. I was looking at bankrate.com this morning at across the top of our banking page on returns on such things as CDs and money market accounts and you know, sort of a basic savings account. And we're only at 0.1% on a return on a basic savings account these days. So we never really got to the promised land with respect to where we thought we'd be on better returns on savings, because, you know, we think, Steve, at the end of last year, we remember that the Fed was telling us, well, you know, if things go as we expect, we'll get 2 to 4 rate increases in 2019. And most people don't wish for rate increases, but for savers, that had been the path toward better returns on savings. And now it appears that, at least for the intermediate term, we're not going to get there.
What impact would we see on people with a large credit card, amounts of credit card debt?
Well, you know, Ted Rossman of our sister company, creditcards.com, was weighing on this the other day, and he's written a piece that sort of projects some scenarios where we don't actually see much relief there, because it may be that there's some, I'll use the word stickiness, with respect to credit card rates. If they don't get it through sort of one form, they may get it in another in fees. We'll see. But I think that in a competitive environment, which is certainly one that we do have with financial services these days, I think there will always be outliers that will be, let's say, extending discounts with respect to borrowing rates and credit card rates. So, you know, one of our mantras at Bankrate is it pays to shop around, you know, just a little bit of time with respect to looking at the rates or the charges that would pertain to your own credit card situation. You can really make a difference by looking for those promotions. Sometimes it could be a 0% transfer offer, you know, for you to move your balance from one card to another.
What about mortgages? I know the Fed doesn't really set mortgage rates, but will homeowners or potential home buyers be impacted at all?
Well, of course, we've already seen that, as you know, Steve, where mortgage rates more closely track the yield on the 10-year Treasury, and with the remarkable move down that we've seen there over the past, let's say, 6 months, we've seen also a boom in mortgage refinancing, not so much in the housing market in general, because the primary point of tension there has been the continuous rise in home prices. So, you know, we look at that 10-year yield on the Treasury and sort of wonder, well, what will happen next when and if the Fed does move as expected. It could well be that we actually see that yield move back up a bit, because that's essentially a proxy or a barometer on the strength of the U.S. and global economy. And so if you say the Fed's delivering some adrenaline, then indeed that might be reflected in that, and then that could actually then move those mortgage rates up a bit. But right now, as I say, the primary point of concern or stress for the housing market, among others, is affordability, and the primary contributor in a negative way there has been that home prices have been rising steadily, well above the pace of inflation, well above the pace of the meager wage gains that we've seen for some time. I might want to add one thing, Steve, that I think might have possibly gotten overlooked in Chairman Powell's comments yesterday, which at least struck me, and that is, as we've talked many times about the strength of the job market and the improvement we've seen that's taken the unemployment rate, you know, well below 4%, Chairman Powell was asked yesterday sort of what do you make of wage gains more recently, and whether the economy and the strength of the job market is hot. And he said, well, for things to be hot, you need to see heat, and we're not seeing heat in the form of wage gains. And I thought that was one of the strongest comments he's made so far with respect to sort of saying, hey, workers out there, I feel your pain.
Yeah, I felt that as well. Mark, there's going to be a perception, I think, if the Fed does go and cut rates here, that perhaps the Fed is bending to the whims of the president. The president has hammered Powell in recent months, and I know Congress has come out, a few members of Congress, to stand by him, but what is that perception going to do to investor sentiment and also the Fed's independence potentially?
Well, I would just say that simply because two things exist don't necessarily mean that one causes the other. There's an old saying we had in debate back in the day when I was in high school that correlation doesn't prove causality, and I think that's the case here, meaning that, yes, the president has been pressing and will continue to press and has said that the Fed's our biggest problem. I guess that's a good problem to have if indeed that were the case. But I think the Fed believes it has, and I think essentially the rest of the world thinks it has the cover to lower interest rates, leaving aside the president's constant, I'll use, blame shifting with respect to him.
Yeah, very good. Mark, thank you for being on with us this morning. We always appreciate your expertise and insight here.
My great pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
You too. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures up about a quarter of a percent each, heading to 8:30 Chicago time. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It's another report day for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It will certainly impact grain traders at the Chicago Board of Trade. Yesterday, only the July wheat contract closed lower. It was down 1.75. The rest of the wheat months were higher. July corn ended the day down 0.75 cents, and December corn down 1.25 cents, while July soybeans showed the biggest gain, up 10.25 cents, and November beans up 7.5 cents. At the Mercantile Exchange, livestock futures yesterday, another pretty good day for lean hog futures after up the $3 daily limit the day before yesterday. The October lean hog contract ended up $2.05 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, October cattle down 32 cents. October feeder cattle up 10 cents a hundredweight. The major grain traders are facing some lower earnings reports as they come out with their reports, and ADM and Bunge, as well as Cargill and Louis Dreyfus. They're known as the ABCD quartet of global grain trading giants, facing processing plant downtime, rail and barge shipping delays, and other supply uncertainty this spring because of the historic floods in the central United States. And so that means their earnings reports will be showing some lower numbers when they're released this month. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. The chief executive and co-founder of Norwegian Air Shuttle is retiring with immediate effect, saying he is way over time to explain his departure. He is ready to retire. 72-year-old Bjørn Kjos had been CEO for the past 17 years and turned the small domestic carrier into a low cost global airline. Authorities say Jim Beam will be fined for the warehouse fire that contaminated nearby waters with bourbon and killed fish. A lightning strike set the Woodford County warehouse on fire last week and destroyed nearly 45,000 barrels of bourbon. The site burned for days and runoff filled with alcohol and firefighting chemicals bled into nearby rivers and creeks, removing oxygen from the water and killing fish. Virgin Group founder Richard Branson has warned that a no-deal Brexit will force the company to invest less in Britain because of pressures on the pound. Branson told the BBC that if the UK leaves the European Union without a deal, it would force his company to shift investment because costs are in dollars. He noted that the pound was at $1.53 when the 2016 referendum took place. It's now at $1.25. Traders see the possibility of a no-deal Brexit accelerating Boris Johnson, the front-runner in the Conservative Party contest to replace Prime Minister Theresa May, refuses to rule out a no-deal Brexit. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, July 11th. Inflation for June leads off today's economic reports. Analysts forecast a 0.1% increase from May with a 1.7% gain over June of last year. The inflation numbers due out mid-morning. Also today, the weekly report on first-time claims for unemployment benefits are out.
Experts predict 225,000 workers filing initial claims last week. And Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell testifies before the Senate Banking Committee today. He was before the House yesterday, that testimony beginning at about 9 o'clock Chicago time. Also today on the earnings calendar, Delta earnings out today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, July 11th.